Hello, my name is Suzanne Wright, and I am recording this interview from Framingham State University. Today I am sat with Frank White. Frank, could you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Frank White. I'm from Natick, Massachusetts in the United States, and I'm a writer and a teacher, and I'm here with you at Framingham State University. It's August 30th, 2018.
Great. So, Frank, could you explain who you were and what you were doing leading up to July 1969?
Yes, I can. So, I was at Oxford in England. I was there on a Rhodes Scholarship doing graduate work. And what was going on was pretty interesting in a way in terms of the moon landing in context, because the context was everything at the time. I think I will begin talking about it in 1968, actually. It was a really chaotic time in the United States. And in some ways, that was difficult for Americans living abroad. A lot was happening, but we weren't here in America. We couldn't do anything about it. And yet, it was reverberating throughout England and Europe. Highlights would include the war in Vietnam, which was polarizing the country. The civil rights movement was gaining momentum. And then, especially in that time frame, we actually had assassinations of our political leaders, which had begun back in early 60s with the assassination of President Kennedy. And I think the assassination of President Kennedy in 1963 created a trauma that was really still present for us, because those of us who had grown up in America had never expected anything like that to happen. We knew it had happened in the past, but we weren't there. We didn't experience it directly. And I believe that the trust and belief in the country began to diminish with the assassination of President Kennedy, and that was followed by the escalation of the war in Vietnam under President Johnson after he had promised not to do that. And then again, the civil rights movement was gaining momentum, and that was actually a positive thing, but it was creating quite a lot of polarization once again, because there were plenty of people who were not supporting it. And 1968 brought everything to a head in a way, in the sense that in January there was something called the Tet Offensive, in which the National Liberation Front and North Vietnamese created this nationwide attack. And there were actually, as they called them, Viet Cong running through the United States Embassy in Saigon. And that was a real shift in thinking, because I think even those of us who opposed the war in Vietnam thought the United States was going to win it. And yet, suddenly it looked like, well, maybe not. That was a shock for everyone. And what's going to happen next? By that time, I was opposing the war. And I had created an anti-war group at Oxford with other Americans. And this was a bit ironic, because I happened to be a lieutenant in the reserves in the United States Army. And it was a difficult situation for me, because I wanted to serve my country. I had done reserve officer training at Harvard, and yet I didn't think the war was right. And it became increasingly clear it wasn't going to be won by the Americans. And more people started to think that way after the Tet Offensive. And so when I went back to the United States during that period, I worked for Gene McCarthy in the New Hampshire Democratic primary, because he was the only person willing to challenge President Johnson and oppose the war. And he didn't win the primary, but he did remarkably well. And shortly after that, President Johnson announced he wouldn't seek a second term. So all of these chaotic things started to happen, and then, more tragically, shortly after President Johnson announced he wouldn't seek office, Senator Robert Kennedy got into the race, And that raised a lot of expectations. And in June, he was assassinated. And in April, just to go back, Martin Luther King had been assassinated. And the cities erupted. There were fires throughout the major cities in the United States. The National Guard was called out. And the question was, well, where does this end? What is going to happen? Now, in the meantime, not to forget our main topic, Apollo was happening. The astronauts were continuing what was considered at the time the quote-unquote moon race, which, if President Kennedy had had his way, would not have been a moon race or a space race. It would have been a multinational mission. But in the meantime, it was perceived as a race. And it was somewhat eclipsed, as it were, by the social changes and the polarization of the country. So there I was in England doing my graduate work, working with people who were opposing the war in Vietnam. And it's interesting because a lot of what has come out of this for me is the overview effect, and that is the experience of seeing your home planet from a distance. And the overview effect itself, I've been very insistent about this. The way I've defined it, it is an experience you have in outer space. It is required that you see the Earth from a distance for it to really meet that criterion. But there are analogs to it, similar experiences. So leaving your home country and looking back at it from another country can have some of that feeling of a new understanding. And I had that. I mean, I think that I would not have viewed the war in Vietnam in the same way if I had not been at Oxford, because when I traveled in Europe, I talked to people who didn't see America the way I did. You know, they didn't assume that we would always try to do the right thing. They didn't assume that our efforts were noble, which I did at the time. And so I started to think, well, maybe they're right, or maybe they have a point. And that's what led me to be in opposition to the war. But December came along, the end of a horrible year, and something magical happened, and it had to do with Apollo. Apollo 8 was not planned to be a mission to the moon. That wasn't the goal at the time. It was going to be another much more modest mission that would be in preparation for the moon landing in 1969. And we do not have time to go into the details, but boldly, some of the people at NASA and in the administration said, we are getting a feeling that the Soviets are pulling ahead of us. We need to do something dramatic. And so they decided, let's send Apollo 8 to the moon. And that was a rational choice in the sense that they had the technology to do that, but not to land. They didn't think they could really pull that off. So Apollo 8 never intended to land, but to go to the moon, take pictures of the moon, and pull ahead in the race, and so on. But it didn't get a lot of press. It wasn't hyped. So for me, I was in London at the home of Time Magazine's American editor. He was the head of the bureau. And we were all in pretty bad mood, to be honest, because it just felt like our country was in terrible trouble. And we didn't see how it was going to get out of that trouble. And I remember a couple of things. One is sitting in the living room of the family, and everybody was watching the first television transmission from the astronauts. And they kind of casually said they were going to turn the cameras around and show us the Earth. And they did that. And it was kind of a grainy black and white view, I think, the first time they did it. But it was still mind-blowing because 99% of the people on planet Earth had never actually seen a full picture of the planet. People had seen orbital pictures from early missions. But suddenly we saw the whole earth against the backdrop of the universe, and it was a very significant moment. I don't think I understood it at the time. I don't think any of us did. But from an overview effect point of view, it was pretty significant. And then the second big moment was when they caught the picture of Earthrise, which has become so iconic. And again, unintended consequences. They were not going to the moon to take pictures of the Earth. They were going to the moon to forward our competition with the Soviets and to take pictures of the moon. And they took a lot of pictures of the moon. And we can hear on the recording that when they rounded the moon and saw the Earth rising, Bill Anders said, "I got to get a picture of that. Get me some color film." And Frank Borman said, "Don't take a picture of that. It's not on the list." And he has said since he was joking, he was kidding, but he was telling the truth. It wasn't on the list. And so that picture, Earthrise, has become in many ways symbol of the symbol of the environmental movement, and symbolic of many people. When I talk about the overview effect, think that's what I mean, although I include orbital views as well. But that was a fundamental change, I think, in our attitude, because suddenly our country had done something really quite significant. And not just technologically, but in terms of our perception of ourselves. And I remember, I think it was written actually about Apollo 11, but there was a poet who wrote a poem and said, "What are you doing in the sky, Earth? You're not supposed to be in the sky." That reversal, I mean, we've always seen the moon in the sky, but to see the Earth in the sky is just completely transformational. And it revealed what is true. We're on spaceship Earth, and it's a beautiful, incredible thing. And Frank Borman talked about it was the only thing that had color, and it was beautiful, and everything that mattered to him was there. So that was in many ways what preceded the landing, which happened not very long after that. And the landing, I think, was in some ways eclipsed by Apollo 8 in terms of its impact on people, in the sense that the view of the Earth from a distance had been done now. The Earthrise had been done. So now it was more the next step, which was showing that we could actually land and bring people back safely. And it was also very highly anticipated, comparatively. Again, Apollo 8 was not anticipated. Apollo 11 was really anticipated in a very big way. So I was still in Oxford, and we watched the landing on a black and white TV, and in the kitchen of the flat where we lived, and it was early morning. We had forced ourselves to stay awake. And, I think what was really impressive about the landing was that in the end, Neil Armstrong took over and had to do it himself. In spite of all the preparation, he had to fly the lunar module to the surface. And I think what came out of Apollo 11 was another boost to the environmental movement, because it was not long after that Earth Day was celebrated. The other thing that came out of it was a reversal of this feeling we had in America of failure. And we started having this kind of idea of, well, if we can do that, we can do something nobody's ever done before, which is bring 3 astronauts to the moon and get them home. Why can't we do other things? Now, that's a little simplistic. We know that social problems and issues like that are much more complicated in a way than landing people anywhere, because that's a technological thing, activity. But it did create that mindset that we can do more. So I would say for me, the big thing about Apollo, if we look at both of those missions, was beginning to turn around a very pessimistic perception. And I've talked to astronauts from my book who said the same thing, that was a terrible time for America, and the one thing where we could hold our head high was we had done this remarkable thing in the space program. And one of the astronauts said to me that when he was on a tour, the president sent them on a tour, I think it was one of the other Apollo missions, but he said, you know, people didn't say you did it, they said we did it. And it was something for humanity. And they also put a plaque on the moon that said we came for all humans in peace, or something like that. I'm mangling the statement, but we came for all mankind in peace. And even though they planted an American flag, there was this feeling that they were representing everyone. And I've also heard contradictory statements that people who didn't live in the United States didn't feel that involved. And that goes back to the fact that President Kennedy had really wanted that landing to be a multinational mission. And looking back on it, I really do believe that would have made a profound difference. Because if we had had, say, an American astronaut, Soviet cosmonaut, and an astronaut from another country, I really think the feeling on Earth would have been very different about it, even though people were certainly overwhelmingly impressed by it, I think they would have been even more engaged and involved in it. So, and the other thing about it in context, it didn't really take away the problems, the divisions. There were still plenty of social problems. Not long afterward, President Nixon had to resign. And so it wasn't a panacea. But I think those missions were the beginning of a new awareness of ourselves and our place in the universe, and the fact that, as the astronauts have said to me, we're all in this together. This is a spaceship. We're the astronauts on spaceship Earth. And we have to work together the way astronauts do in order to fulfill a mission.
Great. Thank you so much. For anybody else who wants to learn more or read your books, could you please tell them more about it and where they could find you?
Right. So the two books that are relevant to this topic are The Overview Effect, Space Exploration, Human Evolution, and that can be found on Amazon. And the other one is called The New Camelot. And The New Camelot is more directly aimed at re-understanding President Kennedy's desire for the Apollo missions to be multinational and to work with the Soviet Union rather than competing. That can also be found on Amazon or at Apogee Prime Books. So if somebody wants to be in touch with me, they could get in touch by emailing me at whitelight2@gmail.com. Happy to talk more about all of these topics.
All right. Well, thank you so much for this interview, Frank. And if you want to learn more about the Moon Landing in Context project, you can visit our website at moon-landing.org or Twitter @moon-context. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.